Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
There goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk radio, and music brought to you by me, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, humorist, and something of a traveler, at least this week, because I'm going to tell you all about my trip to Omaha, Nebraska. Yes, it's there, it exists, and I actually went there with my wife. I have all sorts of stuff to talk about the things we saw, the things we ate, things we did, and the things we didn't do weather-wise. All shall be explained in just about a minute after we come back. Okay, so your business proposal has been typed, proofread, photoshopped, and given a nice cover. Now, all you need is 20 spiral-bound copies and 1,000 printings of your latest brochure. Your Xerox can't do it. Your mailroom can't do it. Hewlett Minuteman Press can do it all. Your one-stop printing shop, Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Open 6 days a week, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Family-owned Minuteman. Their service can't be duplicated.
Have you heard about a country where the rivers run free? That's the place where I think you ought to go. Where the corn stands high, tall as the sky, on the great plains of old Nebraska.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and a segment called Dave Goes Away. Now, I've done this 2 weeks in a row. The week before, I went to Balmer, Maryland, as the Marylanders call it, and talked all about that and about eating at the Rusty Scupper and walking around Inner Harbor. Had a lot of fun doing that, and I've gotten some good feedback on it. So I thought I would tell you this week about a second trip I took, courtesy of my lovely wife, Joyce, who had a conference to go to in, of all places, Omaha, Nebraska. Now, the thing about Omaha is if you grew up out east, as I have, a New Yorker all my life, you're born in Brooklyn, you're Jewish, you have this sort of cliquish kind of group of where you shop and who you know and what you do, there's certain parts of the country that you just don't even think about, even in this global age, even in this age where you see the whole weather map in the morning on TV and where all the storms are coming in, even in the age of the internet telling you where the news is going on all over the country at once. Still, you hear about California, you hear about Michigan sometimes, you hear Florida, New York, all the eastern states we keep on top of. But as my mother says, sometimes there are states that you don't even remember are in America. You don't even think they're there anymore because you just don't hear about them. Like, for her, if you mention Wyoming, my mom would say, is Wyoming still there? Because when was the last time you heard anything about Cheyenne, about anything going on in Wyoming, unless it was in a song from about 30 years ago? Same would go for, like, South Dakota or Delaware. Is Delaware still there? I mean, I guess a certain time of the year you start seeing ads for tourism. But otherwise, it's kind of hinky. I'm wondering if it's still a state. Maybe it fell off the books and nobody noticed. Anyway, for us Easterners, and I'm sure I've already lost, like, you know, 3/4 of the country who would be listening right now, Nebraska is a place like that. We haven't heard about it since Bruce Springsteen titled his album that. And so, kind of weird to suddenly go to a conference, because usually these things are in Chicago, sometimes they'll be in, like, Cleveland or San Francisco. This is in Omaha, so we went there last week for a couple-of-day conference that my wife had in sociology, and I just came along for the ride. She comes with me when I have theater conferences, and I go with her when she's there doing her thing as she's working on her doctoral degree. So we go out of Newark because, for some reason, you cannot get a direct flight from New York to Omaha from Kennedy or LaGuardia, or at least not for under $1,000 or something like that, and then take the actual the shuttle stuff, which works kind of okay. You know, you have to schlep into Penn Station, and then you take the Jersey Transit, and then an air shuttle. So it's a little bit of like schlepping and schlepping, but if you don't have huge luggage, it's not too bad. And for one person, it's totally worth it, because the whole cost is under $15. And even for two people, it's less than having to take a cab all the way out to Jersey. Anyway, we get on to this cramped Continental Airlines plane. Now, this is what I'm a little surprised at. I'm used to traveling when I do on normal planes, where they have three seats across on one side and two on the other, and a fairly spacious aisle, as far as planes go. I mean, you couldn't put it on the market as a house, or maybe as a trailer you could. But this is like, this is a two and a one, so it's really claustrophobic walking in. And that's only important, really, because if you're on a plane longer than you intend to be, you know, that air starts circulating a little less, and it starts getting a little close in there, which you may hear in my voice, because 2 days after getting back from Omaha, came down with a bit of a cold. But we're sitting there, and when we're about to take off for Omaha, on the runway, getting the orders to go in that lineup that they have, and then they cut the engines. And the pilot gets on very laconically and says, and laconically is a sister word of laconically. I just like to mispronounce it like that sometimes. Little Steve Allen moment there. And they cut the engines, and the pilot says, well, that's not usually a good sign. So everybody's right sitting there going, oh, great. Thanks for telling us. And the pilot says, it's going to be at least a half-hour delay. We're sitting here. There's weather out there somewhere that they're dealing with. So until they get that cleared up as to where the patterns are going to be, we're going to have to sit for a while. And the amazing thing I will say about the flight, smooth flight, they predicted some bumpiness, there was almost none, was just the fact that somehow they made up an hour and a half delay and got us in only a half hour late. If that, I think we were pretty close to on time. So either he flew at Mach speed, or they built in like an hour and a half extra into the flying time of the schedule going to Omaha, because they somehow know that going to Omaha will involve some kind of horrible delays and things. And what we found out was that some people actually saw from the window of the plane lightning. There were big old storms going on. And this comes into play when we get back from Omaha a couple of days later. But anyway, we get to the Omaha. We get to the hotel. Nice Hilton Hotel right there, central. And I gotta say this for the Hilton. It's, Paris is Paris, and whatever you want to say about her. But her family makes a pretty nice hotel. So we get there, and the staff tends to be really nice. All the porters and the concierge people. And it's not that they're doing it for tips. They just seem like they're really there to help. I mean, obviously, they couldn't give a crap whether you lived or died. But for the moment that they've got that uniform on, for the moment that you're there and they're working it. And I think that's pretty cool. You don't really get that in all hotels, even some of the nicer ones. Anywho, turns out, now, my wife's conference started on that morning, but she didn't have to be there or present until the next day. So we figured, okay, she was teaching during the day, take a night flight in, and miss some of the lectures and panels she could have attended had we been there earlier in the day. Well, it turns out the one thing that we missed, and on one level I'm sorry that we missed it because it would have been amazing to talk about on the radio, but on another hand I'm not sorry I missed it because it would have been really bleh, was the conference ended up canceling every activity in the afternoon and early evening and herded everyone in the hotel to the basement because they had a tornado watch. There was a big old tornado circling around, coming through Nebraska towards Omaha, and apparently it really did swirl through and hit some little places in the area. So, no big deal, no damage to the hotel. No, by the time we got there, everything was back to normal. Get up in the morning, and we figure, okay, what are we going to do until you present? We figure, let's go see Old Market, because that is the place to go in Omaha. If you're a tourist, or I guess even if you live there, everything is kind of centered around, in a commerce sort of a way, and even a cultural way to an extent, this five-block radius. And that's all. That's the disappointing thing about it. Not itself, but the fact that it is so constricted and small, of from about 10th Street to 15th, 16th Street, and then, you know, a block or two around. And all the shops are there, and all the restaurants in there, and the record stores, and the jewelry stores, and antique stores. You just go, you can literally get through Old Market, and if you don't stop in any place, within an hour, walking slowly. So, but we figure, okay, we're here, let's get oriented, let's get acclimated. And on 10th Street, they have the tourism place. So not like a bureau, but a little visitor welcome center. So we go in there on that Friday morning, and we say to the very nice lady there, okay, what's a good place for breakfast? And we figure she's going to recommend some nice little bistro or a cool cafe that has, well, actually, my wife has a fairly prescribed diet, so she'll have just either all egg white omelet or fruit or something like that. Whereas I'm omnivorous. I'll eat this microphone if I'm hungry enough. So we figured, okay, she'll give us a pretty nice place to eat, and she recommends a diner. Not just a diner, but the diner. And we go, ooh, the diner. She's making a big deal of it. She actually calls them first because she had heard that they had suffered some tornado damage the night before. And she calls and says, oh, we had minor damage, but we're open. So now I'm thinking, okay, we got to go to this place because it's a story to tell. We're going to go to this cool sort of funky Omaha diner, and there's going to be, like, you know, twister down, like one wall will be off, and the roof will be on its side, and we'll be sitting there, you know, spooning yogurt and eating pancakes and stuff. So we get there, and it's really not much. It's this one-level kind of white square diner. It looks kind of old school, of that 50s sort, although it doesn't really seem that old. It feels like something that they built a bit later to resemble the kind of architecture and stuff that they used to do in the 50s. And it really is just a fairly basic diner kind of place, although the prices are very reasonable. I mean, I read somewhere that if you went there for lunch, you can still get a half-decent sandwich for about $3. Me, I'm always compelled to order something different or something unusual if it's available. So if they're going to have pancakes on the menu and nothing, and bacon and waffles and toast or whatever, I'll order that. But if I see something a little bit weird, a little bit out of the ordinary, I'm going to go, I'll try that. So on the fairly standard menu, they had something called Ooh La La French Toast. Or it was either that or French Toast Ooh La La. Of course I had to order it. And it turned out to be basically French toast made with banana nut bread. Nothing really remarkable, actually. I mean, I know that sounds mouth-wateringly good, and it is pretty good. It's just not like Ooh La La French toast. It didn't have snails on it. It wasn't crawling with brie. It just had banana nut bread, toasted. Very nice. By the way, I should mention that the diner is located on 12th Street and Harney, which only made me say about 15 times during the brief vacation, oh, me so Harney, which after the third time, of course, my wife stopped laughing and started hitting me. But anyway, she goes off to do her thing, and I go off to do something else. So I figure one thing I wanted to do while I was there that she wasn't all that interested in is a museum called the Durham Western Heritage Museum, which is about half a mile down from the hotel, just going straight down. And so I'm walking and walking. It's this big, white, impressive building, and I'm thinking of going in, but it's a beautiful day, and I almost would rather walk around outside than spend the day in the museum. So I start doing that, and I notice to my left, as I'm walking, that not that far in the distance is a big old building with the word Harrah's on it, Harrah's Casino. Now, I'm not big on gambling. I could take it or leave it, and I'm not terribly excited by that, but I knew that if there was gambling, it would not be in Nebraska. I don't think, it's sort of like New York, New Jersey. If people are in New York and they want to gamble, they have to schlep to Atlantic City or Connecticut or, you know, off in a boat somewhere off New York waters. I guess in Nebraska, if they want to gamble, they have to go into Iowa, because Harrah's and the other casinos are in Council Bluffs, which is just across the border. So I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is so cool. How often do I get a chance to do this? I can walk from one state into another, just, you know, within, look to be less than another half a mile of walking, and I'd be in Iowa. So, okay, I'm going to walk to Iowa. And there was one other time I was able to do this. It was when I was in Kentucky doing a conference there in Louisville. And there was another state over, and unfortunately I don't have a map in front of me or a brain that knows geography. But I remember that if you went across a bridge right near, like, the Actors Theater of Louisville, you would be in the other state. And it's like that Homer Simpson thing. I'm in this state. I'm in that state. I'm in this state. You know, leg to leg to leg until they shoot him. But I thought, okay, I'm going to walk to Harrah's. I'm going to walk into Iowa. So I, you know, hike up, and it's a nice, beautiful day. I'm walking, and I'm trying to go. It figures to be a straight line, and it'll be a pretty quick walk. I'll be right there. Except I'm walking, and then suddenly there's, like, Amtrak train tracks. And then another set of train tracks. And then this big old cargo train pulling through that's just endless of car after car after car after car after car. So I'm waiting and waiting, and I'm walking more. And now there's just more tracks and mud, because Nebraska is kind of known historically for its mud and the fact that it had been raining and pouring and twistering the night before. So, like, my shoes are, and I'm getting on my pants, and I'm walking, and I realize that to get to where I want to go, I'm sort of having to walk all the way around and not even getting to it. I'm circumnavigating it and not getting any closer. So, like, damn, there's no such thing as a straight line from one place to another here. So I come trundling back to the main road, and I think, okay, what if I walk around the museum and take the road down there, and then that looked like it was not going to go straight, because then there was an overpass, and I was like, ah, the hell with it. So I did not set foot, as far as I know, in Iowa. Although I did come close later that afternoon, when I followed a little bit of, supposedly, the Lewis and Clark Trail. Right in Omaha, there's the place that Lewis and Clark actually landed. And it's no big deal. It's this neat little hill-ish thing over a little bitty river, and then there's a restaurant next to it that I assume was not there when they were there. But I stood there and then walked a little bit further, and I seemed to be under the sign where if you were a car riding over me on the overpass of the highway, the sign says, "Welcome to Iowa." So I felt pretty proud of that. But I went instead to the Durham Western Heritage Museum, and it was actually a lot cooler than I thought it would be. First thing that you go into is the fact is it was an old train station, the train station of Omaha, the Union Station. And the interesting thing about that was what made Omaha in the middle of the 1800s, it was the gateway to the West. This was the place where, like, the rails met and crossed, and people on their way out to California for the gold rush were going, or whatever else they were doing out there. The meat industry soon took hold in Omaha as well. And so it wasn't about meat early on. It was about trade and about people going back and forth. And so this was the station. And it is, of course, gorgeous. It's like the Amtrak and Grand Central in New York. Or if you go to the Philadelphia one, that's beautiful, too. And you go, you see these statues that they've got of these commuter-type people or these salesmen, and you walk by them, and there's a loudspeaker that talks. It's pretty stupid. It's like, oh, I hope I don't miss my train. Yeah, okay. It gets better. They have an exhibit of sort of the history of Omaha through that train station, and lots of photos and cool stuff. I think the best were of servicemen from World War II, who were on their way station there and spending a few hours or days maybe in that area and just waiting for their next train. And you see the soldiers in various modes of trying to relax. They're all in a group. One's reading a newspaper. Another's just sitting there. Another has a really worried look on his face. It's very touching stuff of actual photos. They also have memorabilia, and they have a menu for the restaurant in the train station going back to the late 40s, early 50s. So, of course, I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at the prices, and it's, you can get a porterhouse steak for $1.30 on that menu. Fries for 10 cents, I think it was. And it just made me think, it's like, I realize it's 50 years ago, and the cost of living does what it does. But really, depending on where you go and get a steak now, the cost of a steak in Omaha has risen 1,000 to 10,000%. To go from $1.50, let's say, to $30 in a really nice, fairly nice steakhouse, to obviously the equivalent of a Peter Luger's, where they charge $100 for a chop that they throw on some sawdust. My God, what if, I mean, milk has gone up. It was probably 5 cents back then, but at least milk is only $1.50 for a big old, well, for a half gallon anyway. Moving on into the museum further, there was a Latin jazz exhibit that was on loan from the Smithsonian Institute, I think it was, and that was pretty okay. It was mostly about all these musicians and how Afro-Cuban music came to be and all its influences and the people who were making that kind of music and made it big. The one, I guess, really cool thing is that they did have Dizzy Gillespie's trumpet, one of them. One imagines when they do something like that, or like at the Hard Rock Cafe, they have Eric Clapton's guitar. And it's probably Eric Clapton's guitar in every single Hard Rock Cafe. So I guess there's more than one trumpet old Diz used to keep around. But it was pretty cool to see it, because he had that very particular looking thing where it's basically a regular horn up to the middle, and then the barrel of it tilts up at about a 70-degree angle. So that was kind of neat to see. And, you know, they had a little bit of music playing. Not a huge exhibit, but it was kind of nice. And actually, I wouldn't have even thought of Dizzy Gillespie in that context. Why would his trumpet be there for an Afro-Cuban Latin music exhibit, except for the fact that he had this very important concert all the way back in 1947 at Carnegie Hall, where he collaborated with someone named Chano Pozo on something called the Afro-Cuban Drum Suite, and that really kicked off sort of the whole Latin thing. So he was kind of important there. And then you go downstairs in the museum, and they have, since it is a train station, actual trains, old train cars that you can get into, a caboose, typical kind of stuff that you find in a railroad museum. I'm not that into it, but if you are, well, it's there in Omaha for you. And they had another thing of the collection of Byron Reed, who was a Midwestern fella, who, very, very rich, he made his money in real estate, and he collected lots and lots of stuff, lots of memorabilia, best known, though, for his coin collection. So, if you go there, you see all these different coins and the tokens that he had from the Civil War and different kinds of monies, and the history of money, too. It is pretty well laid out. I'm not all that interested in, because I don't have a lot of money, I don't make a lot of money, so I'm jealous even looking at other people's money, even if they're dead. But the kind of fun thing that struck me about Byron Reed, aside from being rather anal in his collecting habits, was that he seemed like an okay guy, and he left all this stuff to like museum and to collectors. He was a benefactor of sorts. And there's this weird part of his collection in the museum where this you see like a thing of him writing at a desk. It's like a fake mock-up of him, and a big blow-up of what he's writing. And it says, it's his last will and testament, and he writes that, "I leave my estate not to my wife," blah, 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 blah. And then the words, literally, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very, I wish someone would have explained that to me, what that all meant, basically because there's nothing to know that he didn't get along with her or that he was trying to get back at her. And also she, it said, ended up living about 40 more years after him and also became known as a very charitable lady and a benefactress. So she must have had money from somewhere, even if he wasn't leaving her his big coin collection and the other collections. Gosh, more to say and talk about Omaha, and I'll do that right after this. What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, off-off-off-Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Why is it special? Performing Arts Insider is Broadway the best way. 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Or see PerformingArtsInsider.com.
Tearing the old man down from past.
past the heather and down to the old road. Start turning the grain into the ground. Roll a new leaf over. In the middle of the night, there's an old man treading around in the gathering rain. It's true if you're gonna walk on water. Oh, could you drop a line my way?
Dave's Gone By, just sharing and recounting some of my impressions and memories of a recent trip to Omaha, Nebraska, first time I was ever there, maybe the last, but I wouldn't mind going back, considering especially some of the food that I was able to get there. In the last segment, I was mentioning that I had gone to the Durham Western Heritage Museum, which is basically in a big train station, Union Station, that isn't used as such anymore. And I talked about the menu and how cheap the prices were, because it was a menu from the late 40s or early 1950s. And I also got to sit at their little sort of counter where they had an old-fashioned soda parlor ice creamy sort of setup. And behind the panels and the walls and in these cases, you saw the old boxes of stuff, the kinds of, you know, baking powder and the things that they used to sell in the old days. They also had on the menu, as it were, sarsaparilla, as opposed to just root beer or even birch beer, which is fairly common, I guess you can get even in New York. But you don't see sarsaparilla much, and they brought out a bottle made by Sioux City, because again, it's just across the border from Iowa. Sioux City's a brand of cola. So I said, all right, pop me open a sarsaparilla so I could sit in this old-time train station. I was tempted to have some ice cream, but I
was not hungry, because that would have been really extra cool, especially because they had this old guy there, had to be late 70s, early 80s, who, you know, you always talk to these kinds of people when you're in that situation. So he was like, oh, sarsaparilla. And I said, I used to do that back when I was growing up. Again, okay, we'd be going back to the 1930s, I guess, where he'd go out into the yard and into the woods and cut the roots and the branches and the leaves, and his mom would make sarsaparilla and root beer and from these actual things by boiling them down. And he told me a bit about that and how he used to be like an ice cream scooper in an old-time parlor and drugstore, and he used to make phosphates, which was the word they used. Everybody seems to know that only from, say, the old Captain Beefheart number, where he buys his long-lost daughter a cherry phosphate. But, yeah, it's a word that's gone out of fashion, but that's just a word for soda. And he remembers that all the sodas they used to make, all the different kinds, all, including Coca-Cola, came from the same vat of syrup that they used to have to make themselves. They make this huge jug, this drum of syrup, and that was the base for every single soda that they would end up selling. Anyway, speaking also of food, we had a great meal that night. And I'm not saying this just, you know, it's not like I'm getting any money or any promotion or any kind of deal from them. You know, when I go and eat, I'll say whether I liked it or not, if it was special, and this was pretty special, out in Omaha, a place called the Passport Restaurant, owned by the same guy who owns another restaurant called Omaha Prime. And if you ask people about the place to get steaks in Omaha, they'll mention a few different places, because it is the place to get, you know, cow that you cook. But this was real good. My wife Joyce had, and she doesn't eat meat much anymore at all. I mean, she's just really into chicken and salads and, you know, cereals that make you go poop pretty well in the morning. And then I can laugh and make jokes if I want, but, you know, she lost a whole bunch of weight. She looks amazing. She feels amazing. And it was all from diet. But every once in a while, she will indulge because it's, you know, there's iron in meat. There's something good in there that I don't want to get biblical on you because I'm totally not biblical, but I would say there's a reason God made cows and God gave man the ability to kill cows, cook them, and eat them. There's something in there that's not bad to have every once in a while. And boy, if you're going to have it at a place like the Passport Restaurant, you're sure going to enjoy it. She had a filet mignon that was just out of this world. I was a little bit jealous of her for ordering that, but I couldn't resist because I like to go into a place and order something a little bit more unusual. And I saw on their menu, along with the usual continental stuff, they had ostrich steak. Now, the only time I've ever had ostrich was in a burger form. For some reason, there's a diner in Cedarhurst that makes ostrich burgers along with its vegetable burgers and regular meat/hamburgers, and I saw that on the menu, and so I was like, okay, let me try it, and, you know, in a burger, it's a burger, it's meat and spices, and it's got the ketchup on it, it's got the bun on it, it's got all these things. It could be a sawdust burger, I mean, with all due respect to the diner, it could be, you know, a burger made out of old compact discs. You put enough ketchup on it, and onion, you're not really going to notice what the heck it is. But if you order an ostrich steak, you're going to order or eat ostrich. So I did, and it was really well done. I can't say that it was comparable to a great steak. You know, it's a bird. It's a little bit on the gamey side, but it was really nicely done with a good sauce at the Passport Restaurant in Omaha. And I'm sure, and Joyce, my wife, made me feel especially guilty because the next day, in the afternoon, we went to the zoo, because it's a pretty big and important zoo in Omaha, the Doorly, Henry Doorly Zoo. And you know it from Mutual of Omaha and all those wild animal programs. And, of course, there's a big old ostrich pen with them roaming free. And Joyce would be pointing at the birds and going, okay, what, you know, Chavez's cousin last night? And I was like, okay, thank you very much. That's a cool zoo, though, very big. You got to be, like, ready to walk a lot. You should get a good night's sleep beforehand, and maybe not even plan to do quite all of it in one day, because it's Disney-sized. And the usual things, and then cool penguins and bats goats and birds and a petting zoo that I always love, and these two white polar bears who moved in sync with each other, almost like they were doing an American Idol-type audition thing. That was neat to see, and probably best known visually for this desert dome that they have. It's like a geodesic thing, all glass-looking and mirrory, and I don't know, it's a zillion Googlexahedron sort of shape in a circular thing right as you go in. And basically you're walking in the desert, which is fun to a point. We saved it towards the very end because we wanted to be outside for most of it because the weather was nice. But by the end we were like, okay, get us out of the desert, you know. And the most fun part of the zoo was going to the bathroom. And perhaps I should explain that. But it's really cool when everything is so controlled. You know, you've got the zoo and you've got the people tending it and the places to sell drinks and stuff. And you walk into the bathroom and the men's room had, instead of individual urinals, a trough, as some of these places sometimes do, or ball stadiums sometimes have. And this trough was running over, or it runneth over with water. So there's just water flooding everywhere. So me being me, first thing in my mind, okay, let me pee first, let me get that out of the way, and let me deal with the problem. So I do that, and I go out looking for someone to talk to, and I stop this very nice young woman who worked there. And again, me being me, my first thing to say to her was not, oh my God, you've got a serious flood problem in your bathroom. It was more saying, could you point us over to where the penguins are? Oh, please. Oh, great. Thank you. Oh, by the way, you might want to send some people to check the men's room. And then she started running right off. So it just shows you on some level the selfishness of yours truly. But just, again, recalling all the lovely things and fun times, from flooding urinals to great steaks that we had in Omaha last week. On that second day that we were there, we had the breakfast buffet at the Hilton, which was kind of nice. And then, again, the staff there, really cool. The porters, the bell people, and the people who were running these shuttle vans back and forth, they would go to Old Market, which is a quarter to half a mile away, and sometimes even further than that. They would take you in the van to that, and even all the way down to the zoo, which was close to 2 or 3 miles, and back. No charge. I mean, you can tip, obviously. But that's a really nice thing that the Hilton does, and then they were really cool about it. We did walk, though, to another museum. We walked to the Joslin Museum of Art. It's probably their best-known art museum, fine art, in Omaha. And the usual stuff, I mean, it was kind of neat to see the Impressionists and the old things. Possibly the coolest part of it was right in the front, right in the main windows on either side of the building. You had gigantic glass sculptures by that guy Dale Chihuly. And I wouldn't even know him or know his name, but they did a documentary about him on PBS last year. He's this cool guy. He looked like Marty Allen with the wild hair, kind of chunky. But he does these fabulous things with glass. I mean, you know, we're not talking about little baby glass animals here. We're talking something the size of a building just rising up. He did one with flowers, on the other side with balloons, and you couldn't tell whether they were Mylar balloons or things made out of glass to look like them, and they just rose all the way up the window. Just fabulous. I mean, you know, if you've ever seen the Glass Menagerie, Laura Winfield would knock over all her little animals if she saw these things. She'd be like, oh, what, the giraffe broke? Oh, who cares? Look at that. Now, so that was at the Joslin Museum of Art, a permanent thing there. Then what do they have there? We skipped the one so-called main exhibit that everybody was running to there about the history of the Bible and the Book of the Word, and like, can live without it. But we did enjoy the bread exhibit. They had these people dressed in sort of old medieval costumes, and they showed us the kinds of breads that were made back in the day. I guess it was medieval towards Renaissance years. So they had all these cool, you know, we're talking middle-aged people here, wearing these funky kind of Renaissance fair sort of costumes, and actually handing people all these different samples of bread. One had vinegar in it that was really tasty. Another was an herb bread. Another was not corn bread, but bread with sort of a corn in it. And we were talking to one guy who was really cool, and he had a stomer, like the fellow on the Simpsons, not the Simpsons, South Park. Except he didn't talk like the South Park guy. That was the odd thing. You know, the stoma is the thing where they cut the hole in your throat. I guess if you've had, God forbid, cancer or you smoke too much, and you speak through there, and you have to control your breathing and your speech and your saliva. And, of course, on South Park, the guy talks like this, and he's got to go. Or other people that I've known who had that, or there was a ticket taker at a small off-Broadway theater in New York who had this, and it was always going kind of like that. There was always a noise behind him, and it was always monotone. But this fella, I guess they've made advances, or he, whatever condition he had was not as severe, because he could talk pretty normally so long as he kept his finger over the stoma hole. I keep saying stoma, that not to get sidetracked, but I had a health teacher in high school, and when he told us about these things, he couldn't pronounce stoma, S-T-O-M-A. So we say, they put in a stoma, and it just took. And we always say that, old friends of mine, as kind of a joke, except now I'm doing it unintentionally, which is not good. Shame on me, Dave. Slapping the hand. We'll be back with more of Omaha right after this.
Extra, classic episodes of Dave's Gone By here, show after show of comedy, music, and madness, as only Dave can do it. Only $12 per CD. Relive great moments like The Giving Chimp, and musical magic like Making Poopies. Classic Dave's Gone By, just $12. Makes a bizarre but thoughtful gift. For a list of shows, see davesgoneby.org or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Extra, classic Dave. Get them while they're hot.
Welcome back to this Omaha version of Dave's Gone By. Just finishing up my talk about the visit to Omaha, Nebraska that we did a couple of days ago. And just overall impressions of the place, very pleasantly surprised as far as it is a city. I mean, it's a muddy city when it rains still, but there's stuff to do. Old Market is pretty darn neat. It's equivalent to a really decent downtown area in every cosmopolitan city. I just wish, as I said before, that it were bigger. You know, you start walking around that even 3 days in a row. By the third day, I was like, damn, I wish there was another couple of blocks of this that were different, because it gets kind of old. I mean, we were going to walk to get, go to a restaurant in that served Czech and Bavarian food. Sounded kind of interesting. And then we were told, well, no, that's well over a mile away, and you might not want to walk through the neighborhood to get it. And it's like, oh, okay. So it's basically suburb, emptiness, blight, and then four blocks of really cool stuff in Old Market. But the interesting other part, getting out of Omaha was kind of the same as getting in. We get on the cramped Continental plane, we're on the runway, and they're delayed again, going back. And we had heard earlier in the day a guy talking on his cell phone saying that O'Hare had been shut down for a while because of these storms moving across the country. And I'm like, what's, you know, just fly around them, just fly over them, just take a different path. And yes, that's what they had to do. And we felt a little silly griping about the weather and the plane delays when we got home and the next day woke up to discover that there were more tornadoes, more storms all over, especially like Tennessee, the whole Midwest, and 27 people were killed in them. So if we had to wait an extra hour on an airplane because of that, all right. I guess between waiting an extra hour and death, I'll take another hour in Omaha. In fact, I'd probably take another few hours in Omaha, which leads me, in a bizarre sort of a way, to a song that I want to sing for you. And it's basically inspired by a tune that's in the Irving Berlin Broadway musical, Annie, Get Your Gun. It's a song for Frank Butler, the guy, the sexy macho man that Annie falls in love with. And he sings early in the show a song about all these girls that he's loved and left, that he had to leave town because, you know, he was kind of a naughty guy and he has to move on. And here's the Annie, Get Your Gun version of I'm a Bad, Bad Man.
There's a girl in Tennessee. Oh, sorry she met up with me. Can't go back to Tennessee. I'm a bad, bad man. There's a girl in Omaha, but I ran faster than her pa. Can't go back to Omaha. I'm a bad, bad man.
Thomas Hamsel there from Annie Get Your Gun, I'm a Bad, Bad Man. And I had a parody song in mind for it for many years, but I never finished it. I only had like one or two verses down. And then on the plane, I think either going to or coming back from Omaha, it suddenly all came to me. I grabbed a map and started doing my own version of I'm a Bad, Bad Man, not based on anything in my own life, God forbid. But hope you enjoy it. Here's the 2006 Dave version of I'm a Bad, Bad Man. There's a girl in Omaha, stooped her ma and her pa, can't go back to Omaha, I'm a bad, bad man. There's a girl in Abilene, what we did was just obscene, late last night I ate her spleen, I'm a bad, bad man. There's a gal in San Antone, she was living on her own, but she didn't die alone, I'm a bad, bad man. There's a lady from Dallas, my phallus did wreck, but when we got to Spokane, I'd broken her neck. There's a girl in Telluride, beat her up until she cried, cried and cried and cried then died, I'm a bad, bad man. There's a babe in Westchester, what we did is just a blur, guess we've heard the last of her, I'm a bad, bad man. There's a girl from Harrisburg, nothing rhymes with Harrisburg, my beauty Harrisburg, I'm a bad, bad man. There's a lady from Macon, I'm taken to wed, but once we get to Bangor, I'll hang her instead. There's a girl from Buffalo, damn, I really banged that hoe, now she's 7 feet below, I'm a bad, bad man. There's a gal from Klamath Falls, she once had me by the balls, now her skin hangs on my walls, I'm a bad, bad man. There's a cutie from Laurel, who's moral and brave, but once we get to Billings, she's filling two graves. There's a wench from Wichita, killed her with a power saw, now she looks just like coleslaw, I'm a bad, bad man. There's a gal who goes to Pratt, raped her with a baseball bat, can't get much more bad than that, I'm a bad, bad man.
Hi, this is Dave Lefkowitz of Dave's Gone By, reminding you to tune in every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern Time for the best of Dave's Gone By on Live365.com and the special channel DFSX Radio. All you gotta do is go to my website, davesgoneby.org, click on the link, and you can hear a classic episode of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night, 8 and 11. Go to DFSXRadio.com for more of me.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Thanks for taking this journey with me through the wilds of Nebraska. If I could, I'd buy each and every one of you an Omaha steak. But since I'm broke and doing radio for a living, you gotta buy me stuff. Sorry. Or if you can't give me food and clothing and presents, what you can do is buy some stuff for yourself from me, and in that way support the show. So if you go to my website, davesgoneby.org, and that's D-A-V as in Victor, davesgoneby.org, you'll see that we have CDs of past programs, more than 100 of them, on sale, which means that if you liked or if you missed a particular episode, you can buy it on CD. Listen to it as many times as you like. Episodes with bands and famous guests that have proved really popular, like if you want that Christine Lavin appearance, or maybe you dug the Randy Bandits or Housewives on Prozac, or that classic episode with October Project a couple of years back. They're all there. And you'll see a list of what was on every episode we have done since the very beginning of this show. And all the information you need on buying as many CDs as you please. On sale for $11, by the way. Usually we charge $12. But it's holiday time, so if you've been debating, sitting on your hands, sitting on someone else's hands, sitting on one hand with one buttock and sitting on someone else's hand with the other buttock, Don't procrastinate. Go to davesgoneby.org and get yourself a CD. $11 a disc, shipping and handling included, which makes it cheaper than Amazon, cheaper than Tower, often cheaper than eBay or Half.com. And their stuff is used, so come and get a shiny new Dave disc. Or get my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, a book of plays that I guarantee you will find funny and entertaining. If you don't, and you expect me to refund your money, well, that I find funny and entertaining. No, but people really seem to enjoy the plays. There are one acts, there's also a full length in there, and yes, they're meant to be staged and put on in a theater, but I think they're still fun to read, just like you would a novel or a short story. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, available from Holvo Books on my website, davesgoneby.org. And there's a play in there called King Solomon the Wise. So how can you beat that for a Passover gift, right? So let's see. Have I pushed the commerce enough? I think about so, because the rest of the website is free. You know, there's pictures, some history of the show, song lyrics, hyperlinks to many of the guests that we've had on the program. Plus, I've got a blog now that I try to write in at least once a week. Yes, yes, I've joined the MySpace revolution, rather tardily. So you can go to the MySpace.com site for Dave's Gone By. Or just click from the link on my own homepage. Let's all say it together, shall we? davesgoneby.org. And let's also all say the names of my wonderful sponsors, because without them, there would be no site, there'd be no blog, there'd be no show. So three cheers for three sponsors. You ready? Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Hewlett, Long Island. Hip, hip, hooray! Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Hip, hip, hooray for the Bible of Broadway. And MortgagesRock.com, the place to go if you know folks who need loans for college, for refinancing, maybe for home improvement. If you learn the ropes of the mortgage biz, which is basically a lot of paperwork, you can make the commission on every client you bring in. It's not rocket science. It's not gobbledygook hoodoo. In fact, MortgagesRock.com gives you a whole primer on the terms and step-by-step process of mortgage banking. That is because the folks who run the website are licensed mortgage brokers in New York State who want to teach you to do what they do so you and they can make good things happen. MortgagesRock.com, hip, hip, hooray, because making money never sounded so good. Now let's see. I have a little extra time here for some notes and thank yous. Again, I want to thank the nice people and van drivers at the Omaha Hilton. I can't tell you what a difference it made with those shuttles, knowing that you didn't have to worry about cabs. You could come and go from the old market, or sometimes they'd even go further afield. And they all did it in the very best, most jovial spirits. And speaking of jovial spirits, don't miss Joyce Keller, America's longest-running radio psychic, doing her thing Wednesday nights at 11 on WGBB. She takes phone calls, she jokes around with her husband Jack, and this isn't gobbledygook hoodoo either. It's really more about advice-giving and problem-solving than, you know, the amazing mystic brain-o stuff. And Joyce Keller is a big supporter of this show, so check her out. Wednesdays, 11 p.m. on GBB, AM 1240. And Sunday nights at 6, if you're into country music, give a listen to Country Music in Exile, hosted by Roadhouse Vic, a guy who's done me a nice turn or two, so long may he gallop. Roadhouse Vic, Sundays at 6. And speaking of radio people, congratulations to Jeffrey Tozer, the mayor of Swanktown. Musician and writer Jeffrey Tozer was on Dave's Gone By about a year ago, and at the time, he was looking for a radio home for this idea he had. Kind of a jazzy 1940s boozy noir version of a Prairie Home Companion. And Well, he's done it. It's called The Jazz Diaries, and it's airing sporadically on KYOU AM in San Francisco. And so if you go to their website, kyouradio.com, you can even download the podcast and listen anytime you want. Look for The Jazz Diaries, and at the moment, it's number 4 on the list of podcasts in the station's jazz category. So best of luck to Jeff Tozer on KYOU. Sounds like a note a gay man would leave on a dresser. I used up the tube this morning, so KYOU! No, but all the best to Jeff. And I want to mention that Julie Haggerty is in a new movie called Adam and Steve. I guess it's the first post-Brokeback gay-themed release of sorts, starring Chris Kattan and Parker Posey. He's gay, she isn't. In the film, I mean, I don't know what they are in real life. Anyway, there's a bunch of guest stars, Sally Kirkland, Malcolm Getz, and Julie Haggerty, who called in to our show last year from L.A. where she was appearing in a play by Danny Arcieri. The show is called Japanese Death Poem, and now I hear the play is also going to be done at Stony Brook University in April. Japanese Death Poem, which won the John Gassner Award there. So congrats to Danny, who was also a guest on the program. Keep writing, man. Good things are happening. And good things may be happening at Stony Brook for this show. I can't say more at this point, but look for some good news regarding Dave's Gone By. Crossing the fingers, knocking on wood, kissing Blarney Stones, and rubbing mezuzahs, hopefully by early summer. Meanwhile, don't forget that you can hear vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night at 8 and repeated at 11 on the internet. Live365.com has a comedy channel called DFSX Radio, and every week they take an old Dave's Gone By episode and give it a spin. And it's free. All you need is a computer with a sound card. No downloading, just free streaming audio. Thursdays, 8 and 11. And you can go there through the link on, where else? DavesGoneBy.org. Well, time for me to go, Maha. I want to thank my wonderful wife, Joyce, for everything, as ever, as always. I want to wish good health, or better health, I should say, to a bunch of folks in my family, as well as happy Passover. And I want to thank all of you for listening each Sunday to Dave's Gone By. We'll be back next week, April 16th, Easter Sunday, for the 168th episode of the show. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Ooh, miso harni. And gone by.